served as the director position in 2006, and I think before that even, up to today, I don't think the Railroad Advisory Board has had an audience with the board. And in response to some prodding by Councilor Mielke, we decided to use this time this morning to refresh your memory regarding our railroad and focus on the Railroad Advisory Board and what they do for the county. So we've had some pretty good successes with the railroad recently, with funding and making improvements. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jeff Swanson, the dual-hatted wonder, Economic Development Director, and our railroad CEO. So Jeff, take it away.
Good morning, councilors. Thanks for the opportunity to present about the railroad and the work of the Railroad Advisory Board. As Mark mentioned, this work session was requested back in February when Mike Bomar from CREDC came and presented their work program and talked about how they interact with the county. And one of the ways they do is they have a position on the Railroad Advisory Board. And I believe Councilor Mielke requested that we hear from the Railroad Advisory Board about their work, and so I'm happy to be staff to this 15-member volunteer advisory board. They help me as the staff person manage the railroad asset and help develop strategic direction to maximize a return to our taxpayers in Clark County. So without further ado, I will introduce Todd Coleman, who's the chair of the advisory board. Dan Weaver's the vice chair. Eric Temple, the railroad operator, is an ex officio member of the board. Will be presenting as well this morning. We have two advisory board members in the audience, Jack Melton and Lloyd Lycan. So we're grateful to have them here. That's not what I wanted.
You broke it. So I assume we're using the microphones because it's going into the record?
Yes, we posted the audio on our grid.
Very good. Then I'll use the microphone.
Great. Well, again, thank you for the opportunity to address you. And I think because my time on the board, this is the first chance that we've had to formally introduce you. I know from time to time, each of you have stepped into our different meetings and had a chance to see some of the interactions there. I've got involved in the board originally just from the perspective that I think that the county's got a gem. Maybe a little bit of a diamond in the rough, if you will. When you guys took over this, it was in disrepair and needed some work done on it. And as a result of that, the original board members, advisory board members that you had on the on the board itself, really were geared around the infrastructure and the assets and how to rebuild those assets. And today we've made a little bit of a shift in the advisory board members themselves, and those advisory board members are still looking at those assets, but also looking at how do we actually get businesses on the ground to utilize those assets and the investments that have been made by you all, the county and the state, through some of the grant funding that it received. And it's a pretty impressive list of advisory board members at this point. We've got everyone from the folks from the Neighborhood Association of Council of Clark County. Really great to have them on board. Neil Chambers is a brand new member, had his first meeting last month. And it'll be important as we go forward to have the neighborhoods represented so that they can kind of give us the input as they see this operating railroad going through their part of the community and through their neighborhoods. And they've been a good partner over the years. We have not had someone on the board in the past, but we have had our board members go out and actually meet with the neighbor NAC in order to keep them informed. And so this is just formalizing that and bringing them in so they've got an active voice on the board. We've also got folks who have formerly worked for FRA, Federal Rail Administration, and we go through, and Jeff goes through, and Eric as well, reviews from FRA to make sure that they're in compliance with regulations. So it's fantastic to have someone who sort of knows that operation, who has been involved in that in the past to help out. We've got the port represented, myself, who obviously has interest in industrial development out in our district, which is about 111 square miles, which basically to the north end of the railroad today goes out to about 119th Street. So you can see a big portion of the railroad is within our district. We've got private development, folks that are into logistics. We've got the City of Vancouver represented, a planner. We've got commercial brokers. Eric Fuller has just joined us as a new member. I think he's going to bring a brand new perspective as we're looking at how to sell those properties and how do we make sure that developers want to come in and actually utilize those properties. The City of Battleground is represented there. We've got folks who have been on the railroad operating in the past who have actually worked for the railroad, so they understand how railroads operate and what they need to operate. We've got the Economic Development Council involved. The BYCX, who's the excursion trains out at the Yakult, involved on it as an ex officio, as well as Eric Temple, the operator, who you'll hear from a bit later. We've got private business folks. We've got engineers. I know you're always at risk when you have engineers, but it's good to have engineers on the team.
Yes, it's good that they're there.
Surveyors. We've got financial people. Dan's been in the financial business for a long time. So you can see we've just got really a well-rounded group of people who are on this advisory board now. And I think it really helps in our discussions to not just look at it from the asset piece, but also to look at it from all these other perspectives about how will future customers look at it, how will we look at it from a financing aspect, and how do we look at it from a planning and make sure that these properties are utilized for rail into the future. So we're really excited about the board makeup and really appreciate the support that we've gotten from County Administrator Mark and yourselves in supporting that. So I think we're in a really good place at this point. And I'm going to let Dan start this one up, and then I'll follow on with it.
I have a quick question for you all.
Yes.
You mentioned that we're up to 119. And Director Anderson Bottlemakers still active?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they're active in Brush Prairie. And when I talked about 119, that's just the Port of Vancouver's district. So it extends to 119 today.
I want to thank you also for this opportunity to talk to the board. And I think the last time I was 10, 12 years ago when I was in front of the board at that time. But I'm going to go back a little bit in history here and talk about the mission statement. When I first joined the Railroad Advisory Board, it was pretty sporadic in terms of the ability to do anything. It was a rambling of people, and they all told their war stories, and not really much got done in there. And the railroad was in, from a financial perspective that I was in a mess, and it was going nothing but downhill and costing the county money and not having any opportunity to go forward. We decided that we needed to have more focus in it. I got involved as the chairman at that point, and we decided to set up a subcommittee and develop the mission statement and a operating plan to go forward so we could really provide some benefit to the county. And after a few months, we got the mission statement and a set of bylaws, which we could then focus our efforts as a group. We had some good, talented people there, but not being utilized very well. So we focused everything and got people moving in the right direction, got additional people on the board that had interest in the railroad operation. At that point, we were nearing the term on a railroad operator at that time who was not being very effective, so we then developed the process of going out for a new operator and getting them involved. But we used our mission statement and our bylaws and everything as a guide to push us forward and develop the things that we needed to do for the railroad. And in those days, it was pretty rudimentary, and it's come a long ways, as Todd has said, and we're continuing to push forward in areas that we can help improve that asset going forward.
So I'll just add, from the mission statement standpoint that's up before you, it's a long mission statement. I usually like short, succinct ones, but really, I think it does do a good job of explaining what it is we're trying to do, and I'll focus in on just a couple key words, and that is that we really want to see the railroad be a public resource, and it's really great to see everybody on the advisory board focused on that. Most of what we do is advise Jeff or give Jeff ideas as far as how to move forward, and then sometimes that actually comes back to you guys for action as well. But we also want to see it self-supporting, and you know, we know that once it's 1,000 rail cars that Eric gets to start paying the county back and per car rates, and we really look forward. There'll be a big celebration on that day. And we really see the railroad, and Eric will talk about the growth of it, but there's a lot of effort to get this thing going. But once you've got the infrastructure in place, and we've got a good sound infrastructure, we need more work, but we've got a good sound starting spot. Now once we get these properties ready to go, I think that you're going to see it start to grow exponentially for a while. And so it'll be really exciting for this group to get to see that happen, sort of the fruits of their effort. We do want to see the positive economic impact of the railroad. We believe not only will it return money at some point back to the county, but just the number of jobs, pure jobs that it creates, and the economic impact through all those businesses here and all the folks who can be employed in Clark County is something that we can't miss on. We'll have a couple slides later on to show what the true potential of the lands along that railroad are, because it's really astounding. But we also, the railroad's been looked at as an opportunity for safe recreational activities. We don't want people playing on the railroad, but there are opportunities because of the grade in order to have some of the multi-use trails and things to follow. And you've seen some of that happen out near Battleground Lake, and I think there's some additional opportunities there as well. So we are not the operators. We know we're not the operators of the railroad. We rely on Eric and Will and their groups to do that. But we sure like to help them with generating ideas and figuring out how to move all this forward.
So I've got a question regarding the recreation trails alongside the railroad. Is the speed limit for the trains along that whole span 10 miles an hour, so that we're not ever talking about high-speed trains on that? Right.
Yeah, the current trails that exist are actually north of my operating area, so that would be up by BYCX, but I believe that they are limited currently to 10 miles an hour. In the future, as I recall from the planning process, if we improve the tracks the way we want to, at some point it would be nice to increase the speed of the trains, and there was a plan already placed to make more separation through fencing or whatever, where the trail is close up to the tracks.
So I would think it would make sense if we're going to maximize economic development there and make a practical economic engine.
Yep.
That speed limit ought to increase over time, but I would not expect it ever get to 60 or 70 miles an hour.
No, not on those routes. And Eric talk a little bit about the rail infrastructure, which
sure.
is a control point as far as what those speeds are. I think you're probably, you know better than I do, but probably 25, 30 miles an hour is probably about the fastest you'll ever get.
Yeah, I would think there'd never be a need to exceed class 2, 25 miles an hour. And then just another point, at 25 miles an hour for freight. And then just to also point out, when we designed the trail system through the industrial park that we'll be talking about later, we did... You know, in our preliminary drawings, it's not been built yet. We designed it to go around so that the industrial area that we're looking at in Brush Prairie, the trail did not go through the middle of that. So there wouldn't be any mixture of recreation and the industrial uses. Oh, I'm up. I'd also like to thank you guys. I think it was a great idea, Tom. I really appreciate it. And even though I'm not supposed to talk about it, I would also like to reiterate how wonderful it has been to have these guys supporting us. These community members have shown up year after year. Some of them predate me, and I showed up in 2003. And to show up, once a month, 12 months out of the year, they drive to Olympia, all at no compensation at all. The commitment of these people and the assistance they provide to the county is immeasurable. They pay for their own parking. If the meeting runs late or they don't have enough coins, they end up paying parking tickets. I mean, it's impressive. It's impressive, yeah. No, it's impressive, the amount of effort these people put out. And I want to publicly thank them. It's been fantastic. So as Dan mentioned, back in 2002 or 2003...
Eric, you said one thing. You said you're not supposed to talk about how good these guys are.
Yeah.
Please do. I don't know where that came from, but we want you to talk about how good they are. Amazing the volunteers that spend all their time doing all this work, and we want to honk their horn, we want to make sure that they know they're appreciated and give them the limelight. So that's something we do want to talk about.
Oh, let's talk about parking permits for them.
Mark, we can find some way to be able to accommodate them better so that they don't have to pay that.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you,
Anyway, so back in 2002-2003-ish, the Railroad Advisory Board and the then Clark County Commissioners put out an RFP to find a rail operator to provide the service. They were dissatisfied with the current operator, and the railroad was on life support at that point. Out of 400 and something RFP proposals that went out to different railroads, your railroad was so bad off that only one rail operator in the entire country actually agreed to take it on, and he's sitting in front of you. It was rough. The entire 33 miles of track was supported with 60-something cars per year, a little over one rail car per week, and then an extremely wonderful volunteer organization up in the north end called BYCX, who basically has kept that section alive as well. We took it over. We brought in one of our locomotives and started operations and started marketing to different businesses. And things went really well, I mean, from our standpoint. We started to grow almost immediately. And within a few years, it had grown to 300, 400 cars a year. We're currently up, we'll probably be over 700 this year. But throughout that time period, now let me follow this a little more. We originally leased the entire 33 miles of track, but there was really no need for us to have the upper portion at all. Where BYCX was, there's absolutely no freight business north of milepost 14. Your railroad starts at 0.0, which is the BNSF main line running north-south, and it goes up to Battleground, which is about milepost 14, and then all the way to the edge, Wenatchee Prairie, is milepost 33, which, by the way, is probably the best piece of industrial land left on this railroad. There's about 140 acres, I believe, of heavy industrial land. It used to be International Paper. At some point in the future, I think that could be a really great job area for you guys. Having said that, while things have been going well, we have just a tremendous amount of missed opportunities over the years. I can't count how many businesses have called me and said, we need 20 acres, 10 acres, 100 acres of industrial land to locate on. In fact, recently there was a, I think it was a 100-acre user. They were unable to find a 100-acre parcel in the entire state of Washington and had to go elsewhere. And I've been arguing this point in Olympia for some time now that any industrial land next to a railroad should sort of be considered a resource land, much like agriculture. You can't make it anymore. And once you put in houses or, you know, a strip mall or what have you, you can't go back and put in industrial land. In Clark County's case, you have very little left along the railroad. If you look at the maps, it appears there's a lot, but it's really not there. A lot of it is wetlands and just not buildable. So for years now, we've turned away business after business who's attempted to locate here. In addition to the lack of industrial land, one of the other big problems we faced when we first got here was the condition of the rail. What railroads did for years before the Staggers Act in 84, when Reagan deregulated the railroads, was they basically cut service on the branch lines. And as they cut service, the track deteriorated. So they put less investment, lost businesses, less investment, lost businesses. And so finally ended up with a railroad that was almost completely unrunnable, and then they would abandon them. Reagan turned that around in 84 with the Staggers Act, and the big railroads were able to sell off short lines and created a whole new industry in this country. But here's what we're up against. So I'm going to bring these over to you here in a second. This is a section of BN's main line, beautiful 136-pound rail. This is a section of your main line. This is 66-pound rail. This modern, designed to hold, you know, 300,000-pound rail cars. This rolled in the 1800s, designed to hold cars that are, you know, 40,000 pounds. And we're running cars 286,000 pounds over this. In fact, if you look at it, you can see it's sort of bent a little bit. So I'm going to just bring this over real quick.
Yeah, to me it looks like the Susan Homemaker toy style.
Yeah.
Compared to the industrial.
There you go.
Yeah, it looks like a toy.
How much weight will the large one? 136 pounds, you said?
Well, it's you know, it's over-designed. That's for BN's main line. What we're trying to put in is 115-pound rail, which is completely sufficient to hold the modern rail cars of 286,000 pounds. You know, BN is obviously, when you got, you know, freight cars going at 60 miles an hour and 100 of them in a row, then you know, you want to upgrade a little bit. But for our purposes, the stuff we're putting in, the 115-pound rail we've been putting in, is fantastic. And we've been successful going to Olympia. These guys have helped. You guys have done great work as well, getting funding from the state of Washington. So thank you for that as well.
And Aaron, all of the upgraded rail that we've put in has been, let's say, 115-pound?
Yeah, sort of in between those two. 115-pound rail, though, is it's really good stuff. And the pieces we've put in, you know, rail comes at different lengths. We've been putting into longer pieces. There's less joints, so less wear and tear, less of the rocking motion, if you will. It's been really, really good stuff. And if the whole line was 115-pound rail, I'd have no complaints at all.
Can you indicate on the map which parts of the rail have been improved and which are left to be improved?
So the entire section from Battleground down to 0.0, we've put in a tremendous amount of rail ties, over 10,000 rail ties in the last 10 years. As far as the new steel, basically the new steel starts in about the Rye Yard. And then there's also a section from 88th Street going north. But the real key would be to get that steel all the way up to Brush Prairie. That's the big ask.
Which is what, milepost?
9.9-ish.
Yeah.
Basically up to where 503.
And we have put in 136-pound rail in the grade crossings that we've reconstructed. So that meteor rail is going to hold up a lot longer with the traffic of on the streets. It's going to hit it.
Yeah, and also as we go up the hill, if you look at where Vancouver Lake is, that's where we interchange with BNSF. That first 2 miles or so is a fairly steep hill, and we also would like to get the 136, the bigger rail, on that section as well. Just because when you have the locomotive pulling the cars up the hill, there's a lot of tractive effort. There's a lot more, you know, tension being put on the track than if it's going on a flat surface. But as a result of our efforts, we've been pretty successful in providing the opportunity for customers to succeed. When people talk about, Eric, you've grown the railroad, okay, not so much. I mean, what I do is I try to create an atmosphere where other entrepreneurs find a business-friendly climate. I provide them excellent service. I provide them good rates for what we do. And then I try to get them, work with you guys to get them land when it's available. And get them through the Clark County folks, the staff have been fantastic to work with as far as getting through zoning and stuff like that. But the customers really are the key. It's providing them what they need to succeed. And as a result, 10 years ago...
Eric, the Legler property, that's 600 acres, that sounds like it's spot on of what we need to be able to maximize the economic opportunities there, right?
Yeah, I was just about to say that 10 years ago, we started the process with the Lagler Farm. And, Dan, Neil Chambers, who's now on the board, and once again, more community volunteers and Clark County staff showed up and sort of re-envisioned that entire area. And we tried to bring it, into the system. There was a lawsuit with FutureWise, which we did not prevail on. And now we're going through the process again. And I got to tell you, the amount of jobs that can be there, it's phenomenal. So I really, besides the parking permits, I would really love any support you could give with you know, funding in Olympia and getting us through this LAGLA process.
Could you just share with them kind of what some of those customers do on the rail line?
Oh, sure.
What the commodities are? I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah, so we have a wide variety of customers. I mean, obviously, freight railroads, and we haul stuff that's big, heavy, bulky, you know, sort of specialized. But with Bonneville Power, obviously, we have, you know, transformers and transformer oil, and Mega Industries has really, really grown their business. Isidorus has been fantastic to work with recently. And, you know, they move railroad ties and steel and actually build some of the crossings we put into the roads around here. Food Express is a transloader. They transload basically different agricultural products, grains and such for bakeries. Lindy Gas, High Technology, Argon Gas.
Define transload.
Oh, transload is basically where you bring in a rail car and then deliver it by truck the last few miles. So instead of trucking it the entire way. But, so we're taking trucks off the interstates and putting it on the rail.
Is there truck trailers mounted on top of railroad cars?
That's TOFC. So TOFC would be where you see the truck trailers on the flatbed. This is where you actually have like a hopper car and you just either vacuum out of the top, the grain, or out of the bottom, you drop it into some sort of conveyor and conveyor it into a truck.
And we don't do containers?
We do not do any containers on this line. BN is fairly protective about where they let their container cars go. It's an option perhaps in the future, but at this point we don't do any. In fact, I don't think the port doesn't either, in spite of all the rail cars you guys move.
Very few.
Yeah, very few. So. Roadwise is a brand new customer. They just shipped their first car here recently. They do the magnesium chloride. It's not a hazmat. It's what they, builders use to keep dust under control. Basically, you spray it on the ground. Truck rail handling, once again, another transloader food products. Then there's Malarkey Roofing, Lane Mountain Silicate, Canfield Transfer. They're sort of all involved in the roofing business. Canfield delivers the products. And then finally, Anderson Dairy plastic pellets for creating milk bottles. And what you're looking at there is a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of jobs. And there's our growth. Once again, we took over with 60 rail cars a year and have been going up ever since. A little bit of a dip there during the little recession there in 2007-08. But, I'm pretty proud of that record. I can tell you, though, if we had land, we'd be talking probably 10,000 cars at this point. The opportunities we've missed are just staggering. So we'd love to see that land get brought into the system.
And, Aaron, regarding the land, the more specific you can be, the advisory board can be when it comes to recommending those particular zones, those parcels, the more we can translate that into reality.
Well, I'm not sure who's going to do this part of the presentation. I believe it's Todd.
Yeah, I was going to lead off on the first bullet point here, and that kind of leads right into it. If you look at the lands that are available along that rail line, there's over 3,000 acres available for development in industrial parcels. A huge, huge economic impact to the community if we could bring those to their full development stage. Over 12,000 direct jobs or 23,000 indirect and induced jobs. The key to those properties is to really make sure that we've got the studies available to understand, and I personally don't like studies, but we have to understand what the infrastructure needs are in order to support these lands and what it takes to bring them to the actual development stage. And as Eric was pointing out earlier, a lot of these lands actually have wetlands or other conditions on them which prevent them from being developed into industrial properties. So we need to understand where our inventory actually is. So we're working right now, and actually the port and the county have the intergovernmental agreement. Thank you for that. And we're jointly studying through the site readiness to look at what are those lands that are available and what is the infrastructure needs to help support those so that we can bring those to the table here over the next few years. Eric also brought up the fact that we had a customer here about a year ago now that was looking for 100 acres, and they were going to bring 300 jobs. It was a manufacturing fabrication type company, and they needed rail access. Not a tremendous amount of rail, but they still needed the rail access. Could not find a location in Southwest Washington, could not find a location in Washington, could not find a location in the Portland-Vancouver region. And so I heard that they were located into Central Oregon. We need to be able to respond to those kinds of interest. We have another customer right now, and I don't know the job count, but they need about 300 acres, and it's a manufacturing activity, and we can't pull that off at this point because they need to be up and operating in about 3 years from now. So we've got to get these lands to a certain point to where we can react in a timely manner. So, you know, efforts like what you're doing with the industrial lands land bank, and I know Dan's going to talk about that, are absolutely critical. Anything we can do as far as looking at the redevelopment opportunities, particularly like in that St. John's Barberton area, there's a lot of properties that are underutilized that we could look at how do we maximize the value of those from an economic standpoint. But also, how do we, you know, we all want to support businesses and allow businesses to grow where businesses will naturally grow, but we also have a unique asset in this rail line. And is there some way that, and we wrestle with this all the time, that we can make sure that some of those lands are held for actual rail users so that we don't use all of it up in industrial folks who may have a great business and may bring new jobs but won't have that railroad need. Because it'd be really nice to have not all the properties, but some of those properties actually held for railroad use. And so we're trying to right now sort of wrap our brains around how can we do that without overly restricting those properties. So we don't want to hurt anybody's value, but we do believe there's an asset there and we need to hold on to some of it. So
we have a railroad industrial zone that we're using very sparingly, right?
Yes.
It sounds like that ought to overlay more of this and treat that as a limited precious resource, right?
Yeah, my understanding of that railroad overlay zone is that it allows you to do some additional uses on what's otherwise light industrial property, but it does not actually, I'll use this term cautiously, but protect for railroad users. In other words, it doesn't require that a certain amount of those properties be used for railroad. From our perspective, it'd be great if there was like a percentage or some way of saying that, you know, 25% of the properties along the railroad should be used for rail-served businesses. But I don't. We don't know. We're kind of wrestling with how do you do that without causing economic impact.
So how do we find how are we evaluating and determining what a market share would be for these kinds of facilities when we're so close to North Portland and Northwest Portland where similar assets exist? Are we looking at the regional market as well? And who can comment on that? It's like our ports. They don't really compete directly with each other because they have different products, different market shares. Are we keeping that in mind as we're looking at this?
Yeah, and I think maybe I'll start off, but I know Eric's got to have some input into this as well. One of those customers that was listed up there, for instance, was Food Express. And Food Express, Eric was exactly right, they transload mostly agricultural food-grade products. Transload, basically, in my opinion, is anytime you move something from one mode of transportation to another mode of transportation. In this case, it's rail to truck. Those customers, Food Express started at the port, and they've also got a facility on Fruit Valley and then out at St. John's Barberton. They don't actually use the water. So the shipping side of it, it's all rail to trucking. So from my perspective, there's really not a highest and best use for them to be on the port. They could just as well operate on these types of facilities. So that's where there needs to be some rationalization of how we position people within the region. And obviously they're going to want to go where they want to go because of truck routes and those types of things. So we can't overly constrain them. But it makes more sense for them to be on the Park County rail line than it does on the port property, where we could have another rail user who also needs to have that water access, the river access.
Is that being done in Portland, where they match the need to suggested locations or sites?
So I want to weigh in just for a second. So in my conversations with different business owners over the year who've wanted to locate, they perceive Clark County as being easier to deal with than the Portland area, and they also like the fact Washington State has no income tax. For those two reasons alone, I think there's a strong preference to locate here. I just have nothing to offer them when it comes to land for the uses they have.
So maybe no income tax, but if you're a business, you're going to be able to know. But you're saying they're even considering that.
I'm just telling you my conversations with them. When I've talked to different business owners, their first choice would have been to locate here, but oftentimes they end up down in Oregon because we have nothing available that suits their needs.
If they want to locate here, it means they're very smart. They should.
Well, and I hasten to add that by locating in Oregon, Eric is typically referring to outside of the Portland metropolitan region, because land that's zoned properly in the Portland metro region that has rail access is either already developed or is under the cloud of the Portland Harbor Superfund process, and the immense uncertainty that surrounds remediation and the costs of developing or redeveloping those parcels.
And I think we talked, oh, sorry.
I think one of the things that we recognize, we've learned a lot since the Lager thing fell through. One, Dennis wasn't quite ready to retire. Today he is. So we've got a big push with him. And I think that the board that we have here is saying, you locate there, we're going to make sure that we get the zoning proper for you. We are desperate for creating those jobs. And this is our chance, as you said, at the Diamond New World. We've learned so much. Again, with our GIS overlay, we can recognize those areas that are wetlands and buffers. We also have a different attitude now. What can we do in that buffer in the wetlands? That's what we can't do. Big, big difference. I think Fisher Investments is a perfect example of development successful and the enhancement that they've done around it. So we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot from the mistakes that we made in the past, and we're moving forward with the additional information that we have. And even under the comp plan that we're moving forward with right now, our staff has gone out and looked at 38 other counties that were doing things that we weren't doing. So when we come back up against that wall again, we have proof and evidence of what we can do. So every time you go through this, you go through the last time, 7 years of lawsuits. And I don't think we're going to see that. We might see a couple dabble here and there. But I think our staff has done an outstanding job in beating down those walls and have the documentation to let us go forward. I think we're on a good run, and I think we're going to be real successful.
Yeah, and I think that's being recognized out there. And it's just, it's a bit of a lag time, so you got to get out in front of it and let it catch up. And I think that's, you know, to your point, Councilor, about the issue around what is in Portland. And as those sites get more and more restricted because there's less availability of it, that's when the diamond in the rough starts to really take off, because now it is the only, it's one of a kind. And that's, you know, how I've looked at this railroad for a long time, is that it hasn't quite got to the point where it's at its prime yet, but it's getting close to it. And as long as we marry up that infrastructure and availability of lands with that timing on when is that the only resource in the area and it's attractive to people, I think that's where you start to really take off.
And the infrastructure investment that it's going to take here, because we see how much has been done, that reveals how much is left to be done. So as we put together a financial package, important we know where we are from a competitive standpoint, whether we're on the leading edge or we're on the trailing edge, because all that will affect how easy it is to get funding for the critical infrastructure.
Just Dan.
Do you want me to talk about the Legler property first? Mm-hmm. Is that enough on you?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add some things on the Legler property. I was on the original group that developed the railroad industrial designation, and that we then got that property set aside in that and then lost in the appeal process. But in that process, we worked with, Dennis was on that group, as well as Eric and people from the community. And after that whole fiasco and we lost out on that, I maintained a relationship with Dennis and visited him a few times out at the dairy and talked to him if there was anything we could do to help him with his land. And at some point, the concept of the land bank came into the discussion. And I boned up on that a little bit, if you will, and went out and met with Dennis and his sons, and then ultimately with his ex-wife, and then convinced them to come in and talk. And we talked with John Holliday about that. But during that process of developing the industrial land, or the railroad industrial land concept, we looked at, John Holliday was then a consultant to us, before he became our railroad coordinator, but he pointed us to some areas where we could look at a railroad development that we could then look at. And Dennis became very interested in that concept, and that's why he supported the railroad in getting that designated as railroad industrial. But then I started introducing the land bank to him, and he was very concerned in the beginning about the fact that there was a lot of risk to him in terms of money he would have to spend to get that land bank set up and the legal process and then potentially losing in the end. So we ultimately got, we met with Bill Barron and some of the county staff, and they agreed to then pick up some part of that burden so that they could push that forward. And that's how we got into the land bank situation, and Dennis finally bought into it. We ended up meeting also with his attorney, and that got pushed forward. So I think Dennis is very much behind that whole process now, and he has talked about, you know, moving out east with the dairy because he's now got to support three or four families, depending on how you count them, his two sons and him and his ex-wife off the dairy, and he's basically limited to the space he can use. So that becomes a very prime property, because the railroad runs through a good chunk of his property on the west side of the highway there. So it's been a hard process, and I think we're pushing forward, and we just need to get it that last leg and defend it going forward. And I certainly urge the county to put the effort into defending it as we go forward. We kind of dropped the ball last time and didn't push the defense as much as we could have, maybe, but I'm not sure we could have won anything. But
sure, and I think you certainly have this, the support. That project has the support, because we can't just keep being a veteran community in Portland. We have to be able to develop the economic opportunities here. So the railroad that runs on the east side of 503 out there through the Legler property, right? We also have the other half of that land being...
So it's actually on the west side of this property.
But we've got two properties. We've got east and west of 503. Isn't Legler on that? Yeah, two different owners. What's the other one?
Ackerland.
It's his family.
It's his ex-wife.
Oh, really? That's all. Yeah. Really,
it's all in the same family.
Oh, yeah, I realize that. Okay. So with that, in order to service both of those, is the idea to serve both of those halves, left, east and west of 503 with the railroad?
Yeah, currently the west side is much easier to serve. The train goes, or train tracks go right through the middle of one of the biggest parcels. To serve the east side of 503 is completely doable, but it will require some additional steps. But for now, if we just get it brought into the system, and unfortunately, it does have to be brought into the system, I think, under light industrial,
right.
Which is not to say that in the future we couldn't change it to, you know, railroad industrial or something a little more useful for us. But even light industrial at this point would be thrown.
Okay. So that was my question. So it is very doable. The railroad's not over on the east side at all for that property.
We just run a little bit north of that property on the east side, but it would not be that hard to drop a spur line into that, or perhaps work with WashDOT and changing the crossing, because they sort of hate, there's a at-grade crossing so that the cars and the tracks are at the same level at 503, which WashDOT hates. So maybe in the future we could turn the rail line earlier, bring 503 up a little bit, run the tracks underneath, so we then go right through those parcels. And there's a couple different solutions, neither one of which is really that hard.
The concepts we looked at, though, when we were developing that industrial property up there, were very exciting to see what you could do with that property with all the concepts that you could do. But it just that one piece that's on the west side creates enough excitement to get it done.
So other functions the advisory board provides for staff. We meet monthly. We hear reports from both railroad operators. Eric sends us his car counts every month, so we see, you know, how we're making progress in terms of growing the carload growth on the railroad. The BYCX offers a report. They tell us about the media coverage they've received and the ridership on their excursion trains. And they run different programs throughout the year. They have, you know, Christmas trees in the wintertime. They have winery runs and train robbery reenactments during the summertime. So they do some pretty exciting stuff up there. We talked earlier about the support. And we have one member of the advisory board, Dick Claremont, who is a former FRA employee. He's retired. And recently we had our bridge program audited by FRA, and Dick was instrumental in helping with that. Lloyd looked over some of the documents before we submitted them to the FRA and offered some suggestions and edits. So that kind of institutional knowledge is important to have around to help us be successful and run the railroad from the county standpoint in a compliant, safe way.
Jeff, it seems like years ago, there used to be numerous rail cars parked on the tracks just near Grace Avenue and Battleground. What's changed? What was that in contrast to what it is now?
I'll let Eric kind of talk about Battleground and what's going on up there.
What year are you talking about? I mean, we've always had Anderson Dairy has a facility right on Grace Avenue, and so we'll have at different times, you know, cars, you know, waiting in the queue to go into their facility.
Probably 15 years ago.
Were they passenger cars?
No.
That's what the auto bike was up in Battleground.
Well, they still do. Both facilities, Battleground and Brush Creek, both receive the same plastic pellets, so they're doing manufacturing in both places. Well, 15 years ago actually predates me even, so maybe, I don't know who's been here long enough to answer that question.
That actually predates me too, so I'm not sure about that one. The only thing I remember is...
I go back to 2003, so...
I only thing I remember is for a short time you had some passenger cars sitting up there. But that was only for a very short time.
Yeah, the operator before was Ed Bernstein, and I'm more of a businessman, and he was more of a rail fan in addition to being a businessman. And so he had all kinds of deals he was doing with different people. He might have been storing anyone's cars for any purpose.
So one of the other functions that we have is each year some of the advisory board members journey up to Olympia to make the case for additional infrastructure improvements along the line. Again, we believe that this railroad just needs a little bit of a shot in the arm. If we can get up to a certain standard, then it will start to grow and pay for itself. It's been very helpful to have numerous different people representing that advisory board. So in the past, we've had the port involved. We've had Economic Development Council. Either Denise or Mike Bomar have attended. Eric is the operator. You can see in this picture, we also had Lloyd and Dan were there. It's been really helpful to show the wide-ranging partnerships, and I think that as we start to show that the advisory board has all these different interests, it's helped to make us more credible in Olympia and trying to look for some of those funding sources. And so we don't know exactly where we stand on what's going on in the transportation package today, but we hope that there'll be a positive outcome out of that as well. So,
question. The grant funds that we've received for that rail line, what is the original source of those grant funds? Is that in, is there federal funds involved there? Is that coming from the general fund? The gas tax source?
So we've received grant funding through several different programs from the state, but primarily the Freight Rail Assistance Program, which is administered by Washington State DOT's rail office, and from the Commerce Department, curb grants.
Those are the stewards. What flows into those funds? Where's that money coming from that they're stewarding?
Good question. I think in some cases it could be gas tax. For instance, in the current transportation package, the Freight Rail Assistance Program is one of the programs funded in the revenue package that's currently before the legislature. In the past, I don't know if that came from the general fund or if it came from fees or other sources of revenue.
I would think former Senator Mielke might know where that came from, because I don't know where they get their money either.
What? You can't use gas tax for roads, so it would come from your license fees.
There you go.
We also have a capital budget we can get money from. And our legislators have been great, so.
And once again, I do think that having the Lagler property adds to our story. You know, when we go there, we have a lot of good things to say, but I think that really will help us out. And to this date, to my knowledge, we've never received any federal funding, and it'd be great to maybe access that.
Thank you.
What pools might that come from at the federal level?
Probably the Tiger program. No, there, it's a grant program, but it has some pretty high thresholds. So 25% match, or 20% match, I guess, is what it is. And a minimum of $12.5 million is what an application needs to be put in for. So essentially, you need to bring $2.5 million in match money, whether that's our own money or state money, to the program in order to play.
Tiger through USDOT.
It is, yeah, USDOT. And TIGER stands for Transportation Investments Generating Economic Recovery. It's a program that dates back to, I think, 2008 or 2009.
Just watching for the opportunities, the grant opportunities that are out there.
You know, I'm watching, and our programming people in Public Works, we consistently get together and exchange ideas. In addition to that, railroad advisory members, board members bring ideas to the meetings, things that they hear when they're interacting with our legislators or other agencies.
Yeah, when we see those programs come through, I'll usually forward those on to Jeff as well, so I think he gets a number of different sources. We actually have a grants department at the port, so they're watching for those types of opportunities. And so we'll share those as well.
Regarding funding, the port already is a taxing authority. You guys are already stewarding, and you invest, you receive federal funds for so much of the rail infrastructure that you built there at the port. The question is, when it comes to the port's role in providing potential partnering with the county, and potentially the pool that may come from state grant funds in order to provide the local match for the entire grants. I assume you guys are always brainstorming and looking for those such opportunities. So it really have to do with the port being a significant partner here. We want to make sure we have great working partner in relationship, because we're all here for the economic development of Clark County.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the initiatives we're pushing at the port, I don't want to make this about the port, but is to move away from our traditional development. So all the development we've done to date has been down in the lowlands. But yet we have 111 square miles, and as I mentioned, we go clear out to 119th Street on the rail line. And I think that when we, the first time we buy a piece of property and develop an industrial use along that rail line, I think is a moment when people are going to stand up and pay attention and say, wait a minute, there are opportunities along here, and there are properties that are primed for redevelopment. And I think, you know, the basis, as we looked at it when we were looking, because we received about $50 million in federal and state funding, and when we did that, the way we broke it up is we looked at what was network system improvements versus port or specific customer improvements, and we, out of our $225 million program, looked specifically to the what was the network benefits. And we had identified it was about $45 to $55 million. And so we felt successful in that we hit that target. I think we're looking at this kind of in the same way, is that these are network improvements. And if you can bring those 3,000 acres to bear, when you can bring, you know, 13,000 jobs or whatever the number was, that is going to make a return back to the county and to the state, and so those funds will get repaid over time. So it really is sort of that boost to get you going, but I do think that overall it will provide a return back to the community and to the state of Washington. So, and you're absolutely right, we have to work together on it. And I think as we start to move outside 119th, I think there's still opportunities for the ports jointly, the Port of Ridgefield out in that area as well. Port of Camas Washougal is also in Clark County, and looking at what are those opportunities to work collectively on some of those properties, because we can develop outside our districts if we're doing it jointly. So.
Sure, and if there be some kind of a coalition or joint kind of an entity that can be formed with the port, Central the county, and, you know, whatever the players may be there, in order for us to be able to have more diverse opportunity to be able to get that grant funding, by all means, we certainly would love to be able to hear about that.
Well, and it's a great partnership, because we need the zoning, we need the infrastructure, and we need the properties and the buildings to support it. So, and collectively, we all have that. Individually, we don't. So it works out well.
That's a good point to bring up. We compete for these dollars that we from the state and area property. Tell you how many short lines we have, several, many, that we have to compete with. And when we come together as a team, it's very impressive, and thank you for being there, because I think it's going to make a difference.
Is there any opportunity to work, like most specifically the Port of Ridgefield, who could benefit from this development as well? I don't know exactly what they're port model is there, what kinds of goods get shipped, but you wouldn't put that out of the question of having conversation with them to participate in the financial aspects of this.
No, absolutely not.
Financially beneficial.
Yeah, I've spoken with their executive director, Brett Grenning, about those opportunities. I've also talked with Dave Riff at Port of Camas Washougal. All of us see those kinds of partnerships as being viable in the future. I think really we just need to identify what that need is. And again, sort of as you look at what is the availability of the lands, will help to drive when you need to start to move outside those districts. And I think, you know, the Lagler property might be one of those that generates that type of a need to have those discussions in earnest about what are those capabilities. But right now, the way we look at it is there's a significant amount of land within our district already that could be developed. So let's start to work on some of those. It's a little bit easier. And then as those start to come up and be developed, then start to look at what are those joint projects that we could do outside of those districts, if that makes sense. Now, there could be opportunities where people have a need that they could drive that discussion sooner. So if they see something where they need something outside of both the ports, they could definitely approach us, and we'd, you know, be willing to take a look at that along with the community on what those needs are. The last thing I wanted to mention was, I know that there was a discussion years ago about whether or not to continue to fund someone at the county to lead the railroad and to work on behalf of the railroad, and I want to thank all of you for continuing to support that role. Not only is it extremely important to have that representation within the county, Jeff's doing a fantastic job. I think his blend of economic development along with his desire to drive the community forward is unique, and is really, we feel really pleased and blessed to have him at the helm or work directly with him on these initiatives. He did a great job of pulling together this year the funding requests and the informational brochures for the state legislators. And it's, again, can't express how important it is to have that role here. So
I agree. I refer to Jeff as our EDC, our Economic Development Champion.
Yes. Yeah, he definitely understands it well.
And he does do far more than the railroad.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Rob will have the railroad money.
I'm going to have to slip Todd a few bucks after the meeting, I can tell.
I'm already in enough trouble.
Okay, well, counselors, I think that wraps it up. And we very much appreciate your interest and your support of this important initiative and program.
Great, very good. Anytime you have a meeting, we can talk about information. But really, the action items that come out of that, what are we going to do? I've got a number of them that of ideas that I'm going to bring in front of each of these. I think we each probably do. But I would encourage you, if there be any opportunities, any things that we could potentially change, the more specific you can be, the more you can communicate them to us, the better.
Well, the only thing that I think that, looking back, maybe we should have discussed a little more is something that, I'm not sure if it was Todd, or was it you, so on St. John's Road, the area south of that, Todd and Jeff came up with a concept of aggregating some of those underused parcels that are industrial and rerouting some of the streets.
Yes.
And I think that that is a really great idea and a great area for bringing some industrial customers. So I wasn't sure how much you've been involved with that, but I also want to throw my support behind that since it did not get mentioned so far.
Yes, and I think we're certainly supportive of what we know, but what we know is conceptual at this point.
Yep.
And we're looking for Jeff for you to be able to help to solidify that and bring it forward. What would that look like so that we have that something tangible to work with?
And just on that note, last year, you know, we've been talking about that area around St. John's where the railroad switching yard is, and 40th and 43rd Avenues that cut through the yard, and what sort of improvements we'd need to make to those areas to close the grade crossings, increase the capacity of the railroad, and improve the flow and circulation through that industrial area. And we have, I believe, two projects on the six-year TIP related to 40th and 43rd.
Yeah, and we have a significant improvement project widening 47th. From 78th south
all the way through.
Yeah. And improving the intersection of 78th Street and 47th.
Yes, so that's looking really good.
Big first step in creating the circulation in that area that we need.
No, I just want to talk about the barriers in 78th. Go ahead. I'm good.
Okay, very good. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, counselors.